7851.
At 89.3 FM, this is member supported WPFW, Washington.
This is Joni. I'm glad to be here with you this morning. We are going to be celebrating a very special new ancestor, but he will always remain with us. And that is, many of you know him, some of you do not know him, Arturo Griffiths. We just played that song. Some of you WPFW jazz and just people might recognize Ruben Blades, who just sang that song. And I can hear Arturo smiling. I can see him smiling. Ruben Blades from Panama. Arturo was Afro-Latino, a native of Panama. He came to this country in, or this city, Washington, D.C., in the 1960s. We're going to hear from quite a number of guests. We have four guests with us who are going to share some of the amazing work that Arturo has done. And I'm going to introduce those folks in a moment. But one reason we are doing this today is on Friday, there's going to be a very special celebration of life for Arturo at All Souls Church from 3 to 7. And we will be sharing that information with you as we move along. But Arturo is somebody that I think many of our listeners would want to know about if you haven't known about him over all these years. I've been thankful to have known Arturo for at least 40 years. I'd also like to say that we have at least one ancestor who is assisting us in this program this morning, and that is A.C. Byrd. A.C. Byrd, as people may know, was very active with WPFW over the decades in many different ways. He did many shows with me, and he was always advising me what I needed to do. Well, he made sure that we focused on Arturo today. Arturo and A.C. Byrd were very good friends. So I want to thank A.C. for assisting. With that said, I'm going to welcome our guests this morning. I'm very excited about the guests that we do have. First, we have Mario Cristaldo, and he is the executive director of United Workers of Washington, D.C. And I'm just going to briefly introduce everyone, and then they're going to have their turn to talk. Also want to welcome George Escobar, also a longtime friend of Arturo's and is currently working with CASA. And he'll be talking about Arturo as well. Enrique Cobham. Enrique, I want to thank Lucy Murphy for introducing me to Enrique. Enrique has known Arturo since they were children in Panama. So he's going to be sharing some of those stories with us. And last but definitely not least, my friend and the original host of this show some many decades ago, Michelle Tingling Clemens, who knew Arturo in many different ways, but they work closely together in the movement for DC statehood. So with that said, we're going to jump right in, and I'm going to ask, maybe we'll save time. We'll have each person start with sharing their work and the importance of Arturo. And we need to be mindful of time. I'm going to say that Mario is going to have more time than some other folks. You're going to have 10 minutes, Mario. So welcome. So glad you could join us. Tell us about Workers United or Trabajadores Unidos de Washington, D.C. And also, of course, tell us about your work with Arturo.
Thank you, Johnny. Good morning, everyone. George, Michelle, Enrique. I'm very excited about this opportunity to talk about Arturo Griffith, celebrating his life and his legacy with us today. And my personal experience with Arturo really started when I moved to D.C. in the early 90s, I moved to Mount Pleasant. And as you know, that at that time, the Mount Pleasant was the center of the Latino and Afro-Latino community. And Arturo was living there, actually. He, as you just introduced us, he came from Panama in the mid-60s to Washington, D.C. And as a teenager, immediately got involved in the activism that was part of his nature. That was his gift among all of us. And when I came here in 1994, he was already well into all the areas that he was interested in, including working with Michelle and the issue of statehood and Hilda Mason and others. He even at that time, in the early 2000s, he ran for city council at large, and he still remains the most voted Afro-Latino running for city council.
Wow.
See, so this is one of the things that I want to add to the conversation. Of course, now I'm the director of Trabajadores Unidos, and in the last 4 years, I've been working with them. You know, he actually was the founder and also the first executive director of Workers United of Washington, D.C., also known as Trabajadores Unidos. Our mission is to empower, to work with, and to advocate for the immigrant community, day laborers, and low-wage workers, pretty much people in the informal economy. And that was one of the passions that Arturo had with us throughout all these years and all the greatness that he's bringing to us and living to us so we can move forward with it.
And Mario, tell us, when was Trabajadores Unidos founded by Arturo?
Trabajadores Unidos was actually started out as an experience among day laborers with Arturo and some other community leaders and with some churches and even the labor union, Job for Justice, and some others were involved as well. And others that we push for better understanding of the day labor community in the District of Columbia, the Home Depot folks at the corners, at 7-Eleven in Mount Pleasant and other parts of the district. And Arturo was preoccupied with all that. And then one day just called some community leaders, and we started. That was back in 2012, as a matter of fact. And for 2 years, actually, it was that experience that we started out with. Then after the organization became a solid 501c3 status with all the services and programs that at that time and still our community needs here in Washington D.C. And Arturo was, of course, in the first 8 years the mastermind behind the whole experience that led us to better understand our communities from his perspective and in conjunction with other folks here. This is one of the greatest things that he has done for us. We're very grateful for what he has done, and we're proud of it at the same time. Thank you.
Yes. And before we move on to the next guest, Mario, tell us just briefly maybe some of the challenges and some of the successes that you are proud of with Trabajadores Unidos today.
Right. Trabajadores Unidos, we're still at a very important time in our American experience. Whereby immigrants are being targeted at this time in an occupied city. That's our new reality. And starting this year, even though we have made the effort of being alert, we're staying alert and helping each other. We have some folks who have been detained by the federal agents and the ICE raids that have been going on in the city. We've been really busy in educating our folks about their rights and also making sure that the families of the detainees, they have a plan of how to navigate this process. We were more than surprised that we were targeted as part of an economic problem and also as part of crime issues related to the District of Columbia, since we're not into that category, but unfortunately we were experiencing the attack from the feds and being detained and snatched out of our community. So this is a new reality, but we have the tools. We believe there's a lot of solidarity among all of us, including the our new movement, Free DC.
Yes.
Free DC that we are all in tune with, and that we're going to continue the struggle with the richness of all the experience that Arturo left us here as a legacy.
Absolutely, and I'm sure that Arturo would have been very involved with Free DC, and I neglected to say that one of Arturo's many contributions to this city is that he really played an important role with creating a bridge between the Latino community and the African American community in DC. That's one of something that we're very proud of Arturo for what he did. And you can repeat this again, but Mario, just tell people if they want to get in touch with or know more about Trabajadores Unidos. How can they do that?
Well, so of course we know we're in social media. You can find us as Trabajadores Unidos there of Washington D.C. Make sure it's Washington D.C. There are other Trabajadores Unidos around the country as well. But you can also get us in our website. We have all kinds of information about the services and programs that we do, and then the struggle we're going through. That's TUWDC.org, or you can call us. We're here at 1419 V Street, nearby the corner of 14th and U. Yeah, if you wanna, and nearby the Cardozo 13th Street Metro Station, Green Line. And We're here like any other organization, working with our community. That's the way that you can get in touch with us.
Thank you very much, Mario, and we'll be coming back to you, of course, again in the show. We're very happy you could join us. And you just reminded me, I wanted to announce, thinking about 14th and U, 10th and U Street Northwest today from 11 to 1 at the African American Civil War Museum. There's going to be a special celebration of a new statue of Abraham Lincoln. So those of you who may have time to check that out, of course, it's very meaningful to these days. 11 to 1 at the African American Civil War Museum. I also want to welcome my good friend and co-host Chuck Hicks, who's joining us today, and maybe we'll hopefully have a chance for Chuck to say a few words in this hour. But now we're going to move right on to our next guest, who has to leave us early today, and that is George Escobar. George also has known Arturo for a long time, and right now George is very active with CASA. So George, welcome, and tell us whatever you'd like to start out with Arturo. Maybe share some of the things I haven't yet mentioned, that Arturo was the founder of the Latin American Youth Center. He was very involved with launching some of the first Latino festivals, and I think he was involved with some of what was going on in those early 80s, I believe, in Mount Pleasant. But whatever you'd like to say, welcome, George.
Thank you so much, Joni. Thank you so much for inviting me. Hello, Enrique, Mario, Michelle. It's great seeing you guys as well. I think maybe the best part is just jumping off of some of Mario's comments, right? I think as we share our stories about him, it's pretty interesting how we all have very similar stories, just about Arturo and who he was, really the generosity of spirit, the sheer kind of commitment and love he had for his community, and how we all learned from it, and all were students of him in one way or another. Same kind of story as Mario. I remember coming when I first arrived to DC. It was kind of those early 2000s, a little bit after the 9/11 period, right? Right after we started the 2000 decade. And I remember just every community meeting I would be in, whether it be Mount Pleasant, Columbia Heights, Adams Morgan, you know, there was Arturo speaking up for our community, right? Always wondering, Jesus, who is this guy?
Yes, and that was Arturo. Uh-oh, George, did you get frozen in that thought? Let's see, hopefully...
So... Right.
Okay. Yeah. And of course, as we know, a lot of people do not know Arturo, which is kind of surprising to me, but this is what happens as time marches on. So part of the goal is to let people who don't know Arturo know that he has played a very important role, really, over, I would say, about 50 years in D.C.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And every aspect that had to do.
Is something wrong? I'm not hearing George. Is it just me? Mikey, tell me what's happening.
Yeah, George is going.
Okay, let's move on then. Well, let's move on then. And hopefully George could maybe have a few words before he has to leave us soon. But we're going to move on now to a young man who actually grew up with Arturo in school and in the streets of Panama. So, Enrique Cabam, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to be here. Just a quick little kind of joke. I got the call from Joni, and I was at my church, and her name shows up on my phone. And I was like, Joni Eisenberg calling me? I was so shocked. And I said, well, this will be a scam. I said, well, let's find out what the scam is quick. So that also brought me here today. So I'm just thankful. I'm thankful for, Lucy. Yes. I met Lucy through Arturo.
Yes.
And coincidentally, I was working at La Clinica del Pueblo back in those days. So let me go through my piece so I don't take up too much time. Hopefully, George can come back on. Bottom line is that we were children in Panama, Arturo and I, and of course others. We actually went to the same elementary school in Panama. So we used to be in school every day, little kids and, you know, doing little kid stuff. We lived in a community named Caledonia in Panama City. And we just kind of grew up like regular kids. The school was in an area they call Las Bóvedas. That area now is what they call Casco Viejo in Panama. Las Bóvedas, Bóvedas means vaults. I think it was a function. It was right at the coast. So there was a lot of rocks in that area, and there was a lot of water that could go under in the area. So I'm not sure exactly why, but anyway, that's what they call Casco Viejo today, which is a very popular tourist area in Panama City. I heard around the mid-60s that Arturo came up here. I was guesstimating in the 60s. I couldn't say what years, because back in those days, as little kids, you know, there were some things you knew, and then all of a sudden something changed, and you asked them, well, where's so and so? Where are they gone? They went to the States. Mm-hmm. In Panama, we used to say they went to the States. So they came up in the 60s. I happened to find a way to come to the United States, and that was being accepted at Howard University. So when I came to Howard University in 1970, then my brother told me what Arturo lives in D.C. and all that, all that. So we kind of reconnected to the point that Sundays were, in my freshman year, just about every Sunday that I was in town, I spent it with Arturo and his family. So that was really, really good. I mean, he's like a brother from another mother, you call it that way. Mm-hmm. Somebody mentioned like his origin of being involved in things. His father was an activist also. Wow. As a matter of fact, his father, one time I was at the house, and his father said, well, you know, I am a ghetto economist. And let me explain to you why I'm that and what I'm doing about that. I said, wow. So as Arturo got active in things, I was like, well, this is obviously direct line to his father. So that's where he got a lot of that spirit of helping.
And what kind of activism did his father?
Well, I was new here. I did not understand, but he was kind of like, he saw a lot of things in the economy that were different for blacks, or for poor people. And he tried to advocate to try to change some of these things around. Mm. We didn't get into any elaborate discussions about that, but I was just fascinated with his title, Ghetto Economist. I was like, okay, that's very unique.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know all of the work that he did, because we didn't talk really much about the work that he did. But, you know, whenever I was there, we talked a little bit here and there. But I can't say much about the actual work that the father did.
And is it anything that you remember about Arturo growing up together that stands out?
Well, not as little kid, because like I said, in the 60s, we were very early teens, 10, 12 years old. And then he ended up leaving the area. So there's not, other than going to school together and being in the same school and, you know, collaborating from that perspective, there really wasn't more of that we did socially, but then poof, he was gone. So
yes. Okay.
In my real teenage years, he was not there. So we had no much.
Okay. So, okay.
Quick item I wanted to just mention real quick. The one thing he helped me get involved with the Latino Festival in DC. And I was very active with the Comparsa Panameña. And I remember the one big thing about him is that he was in leadership when the big decision was made to take the festival from Mount Pleasant down to Constitution Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Because the year before that, there was a small fire-related incident, and the fire department struggled to get to whatever that was. So he pushed very hard to relocate. A lot of people were against it because they wanted to keep the festival in the community. But the community was just too small. The festival had gotten extremely popular, and I mean, lots of people were coming out, and that area was just too small. So I want to make sure everybody recognized that, his effort in relocating the what is now Fiesta DC downtown.
Yes, and that's extremely important. That's the first Latino festival that I believe is held downtown. Is it? And is it coming up, or I know that it's
I'm not involved, but there should be something coming up. They regularly do it about 2 weeks after the 15th.
Okay, which is the I forget what they.
I don't have the actual date. You know, I heard the date, but I don't have it. So let me get that.
Okay, but I know it's the and someone can help me out. It's the Latino time when we're celebrating the Latino history in this country.
Fiesta DC.
Johnny is going to be September 27th and 28th. So 2 days. The festival is a two-day festival. The Parade of the Nation is on the 28th, Sunday the 28th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mario. And then, so that's Saturday, September 27th, and Sunday, September 28th. And do you have the time or the general time? Is it the afternoon?
No. It started, the festival is the all-day festival type of thing, starting Saturday at 10 a.m., something like that. It goes all until the evening. They have stages on Pennsylvania Avenue, all that, right?
Oh, okay.
The next day is the Parade of the Nations, along with the festival that continues on Pennsylvania Avenue. So those are the 2 days, and the Parade of the Nation is whereby all the Latin American nations can represent are represented by the community here in the District of Columbia and also in the metro area.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Mario. Okay, again, you are listening to a special tribute for Arturo Griffiths, a recent ancestor. Afro-Latino, has been in D.C., an activist in D.C. since the mid-1960s. And we're blessed to have four special guests, maybe five, actually. And so let's keep rolling here. I'm going to ask, Michelle to jump on, and then we'll see if George can come back on before he has to leave. Michelle Tingland Clemens, again, has been very much a part of this radio show, and she and I have worked together for many decades. And she worked closely with Arturo in the struggle for D.C. statehood. So welcome, Michelle.
Good morning, Joni. Hey, Mario. Hello, everybody. Okay, I started to say, you know, Mario kind of covered the waterfront, but and he did, but I first really got to know Arturo. Well, Arturo and Rick and I were all members of the Statehood Party, which preceded the Statehood Green Party. So we worked, and Arturo was part of the Statehood Party. The Statehood Party was actually a home for political activists who didn't necessarily believe in the U.S. electoral system, but recognized that a lot of the people did. And so, but, you know, our goal was reaching the hearts and minds of people. So we got involved with Arturo there. And I remember that Rick at that time, when Arturo was running for city council at large, and I think Rick was on the central committee of what had become the Statehood Green Party. And so I kept remembering hearing when I ran years later for the same position, everybody, they always wanted to talk about, and Arturo got all of these votes. They always wanted to talk about the 25,000 votes he got in the primary.
Wow.
That was kind of their benchmark. You know, he was like, and I haven't even gone back to check the figures. That's just the ones they kept reciting to me.
Wow. But, and you know what? Let me just say, Free DC always says that all you have to do in DC is organize 24,000 people around something, and you got it made. So Arturo did that.
You know, well, we didn't have, we could have used the ghetto economists right about then, but, you know, but circumstances keep shifting. And so, and the landscape keeps shifting. So that was that. I remember Rick organizing an event for him out here at the library. And I started thinking about it recently because I was like, could we really do a political event at the library?
Ward 7.
Yes.
And Northeast.
This is Capitol View Library. Mm-hmm. So that used to be our main library. We just lived actually right down the street from it. So later on, it became, you know, the library became like a very important entity for us in many other ways. But I want to continue talking about Arturo's roles. Mm-hmm. I served for several years on some of the earlier teams of the grant writing teams grant reading teams for Diverse City Fund. And I seem to remember Arturo was on at least one of those terms that I served
because yes.
I organized for us to have a meeting over in Mount Pleasant at the center on recognized then for his role in the community, which is one of the reasons he'd been recruited to the team, because you know if we were able to set with that and with those successive teams kind of the standard for what we'll be looking for, you know, and organizations to fund. How could we provide support to those organizations? How could we encourage them? And where else could we help direct them for funding? Because, you know, money is always tends to be an issue when you're organizing for justice. When you want justice, not to deny it. It's pretty easy to get money to deny justice, but, you know, when you got more serious issues. But anyway, so I remember... And Arturo then became he was a friend of the family, because I remember him. I don't know if we had couldn't have been the first one, but I remember when we had a house note party. You know, people remember rent parties. Well, some friends would come to us during a real stressful time after I'd gotten fired for doing my job, tended to. And we had an event out here at the house, and Arturo was one of the supporters who came, and he came with other people, because I remember him mostly having a big argument because the Democrats were trying to beat up on people in statehood greens because Ralph Nader had run for office and Gore had capitulated. But they wanted to blame us for having Ralph Nader run. And I remember, you know, I remember it was a historic argument. But, you know, we had to point out to them that, number one, it wasn't our fault that they wouldn't, that the court wouldn't stand up for the law. It wasn't our fault that the Democrats didn't push them. And that's kind of a lesson for us all today, that, you know, we will get whatever oppression that we stand for as a people. So one of the things we all recognize is that if we don't agree, if we don't comply, if we don't go along with it, then there's resistance. We are the part of the resistance, and we're not going to capitulate. And so Arturo was a partner in that effort to fight against all of the kinds of repression that all of us are facing. And they like to divide us up into different component parts, like they divide the families. They want to divide us as communities so that we oppose each other as opposed to support each other, when in fact we're part of the same class. We're all workers who use everything in this
country. Yes. I'm sorry to cut you off, Michelle, but we running out of time. This is To Heal DC, WPFW 89.3 FM. We're spending this hour in tribute to Arturo Griffiths. And let's see if George can jump back on. I know he has to leave soon, so that's why I wanted to see. George, are you able to rejoin us? And hopefully we can hear you better.
Yes, I'm so sorry, Joni. Sorry about that. I think my internet cut off here in Langley Park. But can you all hear me okay? I'm okay
yes,
now?
Yes, you're fine. And anything you want to add, George, that we haven't talked about in terms of Arturo, I don't know if you could add to his role with what was going on in Mount Pleasant. I think it was in the early 80s, but whatever other information, because keep in mind, many people do not know Arturo. I know it's hard for us to believe, but we're part of the goal of this show is to let our listeners know that we have a very important ancestor that we want people to learn about. So anything else you would like to add?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I think maybe, you know, bridging from Michelle's comments as well, like remembering just the integral role that he played in really advocating for the policies that he did and working across these communities to create really like, especially for us in the immigrant community, right? Create the policies that just were the foundation of the welcoming environment that Washington, D.C. always had. And in light of this current disaster and current occupation that Trump has promulgated, like this is a real travesty of what's going on, right? Because the legacy of Arturo and actually his generation of everybody that he worked with created a set of policies, rules, and actually things that were eventually placed into legislation by the D.C. Council, like dividing, first of all, dividing what the role of police is and what the role of federal immigration enforcement is. Mm-hmm. Result of all that advocacy that came up in the 90s after the uprising that we had in Mount Pleasant, when a Salvadoran man was shot in the back because he was handcuffed by a police officer, really creating, you know, that sort of advocacy that came out of that like long feeling of oppression that the immigrant Latino community felt by the police back then. A lot of great advocacy and a lot of great policies came after that, thanks to not only Arturo, but his whole generation, right? And that's when we had this flourishing of community-based organizations that really flourished on Columbia Road, in Mount Pleasant, in Adams Morgan. You had organizations like the Latino Economic Development Corporation that came up, LAYC, which he was a board member of, that provided services and even housing and workforce opportunities for out of school youth across the city. And you had all of this. You had not only this investment in these communities that have been previously marginalized, but you also had these policies. You had these policies again declaring that Washington, D.C. is its own entity, has its own autonomy, has its own police force, and it's mandated to do community policing. It's not there to be questioning people about their immigration status because of what they look like, because of what languages they speak, right? Mm-hmm. You had things like the Language Access Act that then was put forward, mandating that offices within the government provide services in the language in which their residents speak, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Regardless of their immigration status. So on and on, you know, a series of honestly model policies and model legislation for the rest of our region. Now I'm at CASA, for instance, and this is what we do on a daily basis. We try to advocate and model a lot of those victories that happen for our community in DC, all across the region, in Maryland and Virginia and Pennsylvania, because they were truly, in fact, model policies, right? About how to have a transparent government, how to provide services and represent the diversity, the whole of the city, and not just one segment of the population, right? And that is truly like he was an incredible organizer. He was an incredible leader, but also like there's tangible things that you can see that are his legacy, right? Tangible policies, tangible legislations that was passed, investment into these organizations, investment into the community that would have not have happened if he wasn't there, and him and his generation of cohorts didn't push for this. Like, you know, I consider myself as somebody that is working based on, you know, the foundation that he built, and somebody that that could not do what I do if that generation didn't provide us the opportunity to make the difference that we want to make today, right?
And absolutely. I think that's
overall, absolutely, like when I think of him, that's what kind of foremost comes to my mind.
Yes. And do you remember what year that uprising in Mount Pleasant was? Or does anyone
remember? That was 91. There was 91, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, then the Civil Rights Commission, the commission, Civil Rights Commission that was commissioned, you know, like 92, 93. You started to see that investment and the results of all that advocacy and work, you know, around like by the mid 90s.
Yes, absolutely. And there was the Office of Latino Affairs established, but I believe that office is no longer happening, unless I'm mistaken.
It does exist, as far as I understand. Deputy director there about like 15 years ago.
Oh, okay.
but it still exists. You know, I think it's also an opportunity. It still exists, and I think there's still a connection with the community, and it's still an important kind of conduit to funding to a lot of organizations.
Oh, that's good.
Absolutely. But I mean, I think still the challenge is, you know, well, how does the city assert its autonomy, its authority? How does it ensure that this massive wave of deportation ceases? How do we keep these masked officials from just tackling people on motor scooters because they seem to speak another language and they have another color and they're people of color? How do we keep that enforcement from happening right now, right? And how do we keep our immigrant community safe? I think those are the challenges we have, and I think, you know, we need to look back at how Arturo and his generation dealt with it, and use that as a guide to move forward, and hopefully, you know, stop this, because this is a huge crisis for our immigrant community, and something that I'll guarantee you that Arturo would be marching on the streets every day.
Oh yes, he absolutely would. and George, do you happen to know? You may not know, but the numbers of people who've been swiped up in D.C. or maybe even in Maryland recently, since the summer.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, at CASA, we run a raid tip line and are constantly receiving reports of pickups and our follow up with individuals that are picked up and try to match them with legal services, with social services. And, you know, every day, you know, our hotline gets between 30 and 50 calls. The majority of those calls are coming from, you know, right now, over since August to date, you know, about 75% of those calls are actually coming from DC pickups, right? To show you how concentrated the effort has been. And it's really been, you know, a really challenging situation for our community.
Yeah, absolutely.
As a lot of people know.
And do you know maybe how many people have been locked up? I know I keep seeing these, you know, horrible pictures of people in Mount Pleasant going to work and they're swiped up and locked up. But I don't have an idea of how many actual numbers of people it's been.
That is one of the principal issues, that there is no transparency. There is no way to really have an accurate number. All, you know, organizations such as ourselves, you know, there's mutual aid organizations that have their tip lines as well, and they can cite you numbers up to 1,000 folks over the course of the last 45 days. Now, those folks, it's hard to determine the status of those incidents and those pickups, but, you know, we can only let you know what we're seeing. But that is one of the major issues that this administration works in the shadows. They do not provide any transparency about what they're doing, why they're doing it, and that's why all of this is illegal. And really, you know, we need to challenge this, and we need to shine a brighter light on all of this.
Absolutely,
and Johnny, I want to add very quickly here in the at Trabajadores Unidos, we do also have a list of our detainees and some people that have been detained and released and all. But all in all, there is an estimate about in the District of Columbia, only over 300 folks who have been detained. But like George said, those numbers are kind of fuzzy because, you know, it's hard to to prove 100% because of the transparency of the system. And we're still actually going through this process. So we, it's just like last Friday, three of our day laborers at Home Depot were picked up, two Venezuelans and one Guatemalan, as we understand. And sometimes we only know them by their nicknames and things like that. So to gather information, to put it all together, takes a little bit, but we've been working with other organizations, as CAS and others, AMICA and others, to kind of have a list of detainees and then the way to help them to navigate the legal system as well, once they're in detention. So this is still going on. It's really heartbroken. Many families have been touched with this issue, and we keep working with our communities to make sure their safety. In fact, the federal government actually complained about, you know, the Know Your Rights sessions that we have organized, and we were able to. We believe that we've been able to actually reduce the number of detainees because of the type of work that we're doing in our communities right now. We're in resistant, active resistant and alert, and we're actually navigating the system as we go. So Arturo, like you very well said, might have been part of all this as well. And
absolutely,
as far as I know, he's been working on two main issues just before he passed away. And one of them is
just one second, Mari. I want to thank George Escobar for joining us. Right. He has to jump off. Thank you very much, George. And hopefully we'll see you on Friday. Thank you for the work that CASA is doing.
Well, thank you all. Thank you so much, Joni.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, Mari, I'm sorry. Continue what you were sharing.
Well, I was just saying, I wanted to add very quickly two more issues that Arturo have been working on. Like the DCID issue was actually 15 years ago, one of the main issues that Arturo and the community, all the members of the community, we worked together to make sure that people who are not documented in the District of Columbia because of the collapse of the immigration system and the lack of response from the federal government and Congress to create a comprehensive immigration reform, that we locally allowed our residents, DC residents, or non-citizens to have a DC ID and also a driver's license, so we can safely drive around in the city and in our surrounding states as well. So the latest one that Arturo was working on is Amigos Park. It's a small park at the corner of Mount Pleasant and Canyon. You know, it's a little community park that we've been struggling with, you know, to in different stages of the process to see if we can really create a community, a park that can serve the community there in Mount Pleasant. So these are some of the things that we still need to keep working together to make sure, you know, we respond to the legacy of Arturo.
Absolutely. And in a moment, I'm going to ask you to help me give the details for Friday. But Chuck Hicks, if you have something very quick you want to say, jump on. I know that Chuck Hicks was also a friend of Arturo's.
Yes, Johnny, for a very long time. One of the things about Arturo is whenever you saw him, man, he had a nice smile to greet you with.
Yes.
And he was about organizing. He was very about bringing organizations together. He was trying to build, always wanted to build coalitions. He knew the importance of coalitions.
Absolutely.
And he was willing to struggle and support any organization.
That was doing the right thing, yeah.
He understood that your struggle was his struggle, and his struggle was my struggle. Those are very, very important things that he carried.
Absolutely. He believed in solidarity, that's for sure.
Yes.
Solidarity forever. And Chuck, I wish we had more time, but I'm going to ask Mario to let our listeners know, and I can jump in as well. This Friday, starting at 3 p.m., is going to be a celebration of life and of Arturo's legacy. And this is an invitation for everybody, anybody, even if you didn't know Arturo, to participate. So, Mario, share with us what is happening on Friday.
Right. As you mentioned, we're organizing a celebration of Arturo's life and legacy this coming Friday, September 26th, starting at 3 p.m. at All Souls Church. This is at 1500 Harvard Street, Northwest D.C., nearby the corner of 16th and Columbia Road, that church there. We're really excited to put together a team of people from all ages that they're going to be coming together to celebrate his life and his legacy, and then participate in an event that we hope to be is for the entire community. Not only the people that knew him, but the people that wanted to celebrate him with us. And so that way, we're going to have an special event at the church, and then there's going to be a little march that we're going to do after the first part of the event to Mount Pleasant, to the Mount Pleasant neighborhood, which is a few blocks from All Souls Church. And then we're going to come back and close our ceremony with an event with live refreshments and such. But the most important thing is that we come together in this difficult time, but at the same time, and show the strength of our community working together in solidarity and the way that Arturo would wanted us to see together.
Absolutely. And so again, that is this Friday, 3 p.m. at All Souls Church, 1500 Harvard. 3 to 4 is a service. 4 to 5 is the rally or march to Amigos Park in Mount Pleasant. And if you need to stay at the church, you could just hang out there because everyone's coming back by 5 o'clock. From 5 to 7 p.m. is the repast. And if you would like more information, you can check out, and Mario, you can help me. You can check out the your organization, United Workers of Washington, D.C., and the website is tuwdc.org. If you need to look at this information again, you can find it on that website. I understand there'll be food, and I'm sure there's going to be music too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, as you mentioned earlier, when at the beginning of the program, we were listening to some good music from Ruben Blades and some salsa there. Some kind of music would be there as well. So, we're really excited about this opportunity to reconnect with all of us at this very important time for all of us.
Absolutely. I would like to thank also Lois Athey, who is Arturo's partner, who assisted me with this show as well. I want to thank all of our guests. Of course, Mario. And Mario, say your whole name. Oops, he disappeared. Okay, maybe Michelle can help me with Mario's name. Michelle Tingling Clements, thank you.
Yes, you're more than welcome. That's Mario Cristaldo.
Okay, and Enrique Cobham, thank you so much, Enrique. I want to also thank our wonderful engineer, Magic Mike, who we couldn't do this without him. We are going to be going out with, and all this music is devoted to Arturo. Some of you may know Hector Lavoe. I believe he's Puerto Rican, but he's going to be singing a great song, La Murga de Panama. And if we had time, I'm sure Enrique could tell us about that song, and probably Mario too. But the music is part of the spirit that will continue for many, many years with our friend, our brother, Arturo Griffiths. Thank you very much again to the guests and for making this celebration possible. And we continue the struggle for peace and for justice.
WPFW presents Genius plus Soul equals Ray and John. Tuesday, September 23rd, 5 a.m. until midnight. This will be a fundraising birthday tribute like no other, illuminating the lives and contributions of Ray Charles and John Coltrane, two icons of American music. Schedule and details at WPFWFM.org, where you can also contribute anytime. WPFW, preserving the culture one broadcast at a time.
Appeal Incorporated presents its 8th annual Founders Day celebration with dinner and a show on Sunday, September 28th at 4 p.m. featuring Sahel, Anamualago, Bamani Armah, Kaba Soul Singer, and DJ One Love at the Thurgood Marshall Center, 1816 12th Street Northwest. Details, including how to join virtually, at appealinc.org or 800-711-7851.
This is Rev Yearwood, and I am so excited to announce our new climate show, Think 100% Climate Friday. This show will keep you up to date on everything climate justice related in a rapidly changing world. We will discuss breaking news and updates on environmental issues, the climate crisis, COVID-19, and politics. This show will make tangible how the climate crisis is already impacting our lives and what you can do about it. So tune in every Friday at 9 o'clock a.m. right here on WPFW 89.3, your jazz and justice station.
The Birchmere presents The Robert Cray Band, September 24th. Arturo Sandova, September 28th, and The Whispers on October 10th and 11th. Details at thebirchmere.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
This is Ronald Hampton, convener of IBW's Police Justice and Accountability Task Force. Are you sick and tired of Trump's occupation of Washington, D.C. and other chocolate cities around the country? IBW is convening an emergency summit to address this urgent issue. Saturday, September the 27th, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, sharp at the historic New York Avenue Presbyterian Church, 1313 New York Avenue Northwest in Washington, D.C. Speakers include Dr. Julian Malvo, Sonia Pruitt, Kimon Freeman, Denise Rolock Barnes, and more. That's Saturday, September the 27th, 1 p.m. sharp at the historic New York Avenue Presbyterian Church. Doors open at 12:30 p.m. Details at IBW.